the interest to everybody today, given the political situation, the tariffs that we face, a lot of the extra kind of administrative costs that there are in obtaining. You know, China dominates the rare earth magnet market, both in refining of material and the production of magnets. So most of the magnets that we get with rare earth come from China. We know that this has had challenge recently in price volatility. Right now we're experiencing another extreme spike in neodymium prices in the marketplace. We've seen prices of 400% increases, 25%. We're going through 170% increase right now in neodymium material. As a manufacturer, when your base material prices change like this, it makes it very difficult for you to plan and to make sure that your products are going to have reasonable margin throughout their lifetime. So a lot of customers are trying to figure out how do we either replace neodymium in our supply chain, or how do we at least reduce the amount of neodymium that we use so that we don't have as much of this problem in our price structure. Then on top of that, we've got a whole political situation between at least the United States and China. Both sides retaliating against each other, creating tariffs every day. You don't know what the tariff is. You don't know if it's 10% or 200% or 15% or 45% or whatever it happens to be. But they go all over the place. And that makes it really hard, again, for manufacturers to have predictable cost structure. On the other side of things, China has also retaliated with some very restrictive trade policies, limiting the ability to actually export some of the very heaviest rare earth materials. So in this case, it's not a price issue. You suddenly find yourself unable to export materials out of China that you need to satisfy your customers' requirements. So this is, just a tragic result for a manufacturer. And then, of course, we've been slapped now with a $250 surcharge on every single shipment, including prototype shipments. So if you buy 5 magnets from China, you'll be charged $250 just for an inspection fee to get those 5 magnets out of China. So all of this has just caused the cost of doing business in China with rare earth materials is being extremely onerous and very unpredictable, not understanding what the prices are going forward. So using less rare earth material or none at all in our products will become increasingly critical to commercial success. So we have been focusing on this with a variety of different customers in the automotive and defense industries in the US and in Europe. Now, the number one thing that we hear is we have to have neodymium because we need the strength. We have to have the holding power, and that's where polymagnet can help. Most of the potential energy in a magnet is not used in the designs that we incorporate into our products. We waste the potential energy of magnets because magnets have been so cheap for so long. We simply put magnets into our design, unrefined, unoptimized. We waste the energy, and then if we need more, we just buy bigger magnets and we redo our design. So this era is about to end. Polymagnet's mission is to develop a technology-differentiated Western supply chain for magnetic technology so that we have a very different approach to bringing strong magnetic solutions to market. It was all brought about by a NASA researcher who actually was not a magnet professional. He was a deep space communication signal expert. And he was trying, he was one of the most prolific inventors in the United States. He had over 400 patents to his name. And he was trying to invent a toy for his grandchild. And he wanted to use magnets, but he wanted every magnet to be unique. So he wanted only these two magnets to attach to each other, and only these two magnets to attach to each other, and only these two magnets to have a code, so to speak, a digital code on every magnet where every magnet was unique and would only attach to one other magnet. And everybody looked at him in the magnet industry and says, well, you're crazy. All norths attached to all souths, all magnets attached to each other. That's not how magnets work. Well, he decided to use signal processing and wave theory and coding theory, and he created the entire science of polymagnetics. And polymagnetics allows you to encode unique codes into magnets where you really can create unique pairs of magnets that only attach to each other. And he spent about 8 years developing this technology and patenting it, but in that process, what he figured out is not only can you encode magnets to be unique, you can encode magnets to change their magnetic behavior. You can make the magnets stronger, you can change their mechanical attachment forces, you can combine functions in one magnet, and I can kind of show you some of those things in a moment. So we applied these signal processing, coding theory, and wave theories to the basic principles of magnetics, and that's where polymagnet was born. Polymagnets sits at the center of signal processing and coding, signal correlation and wave theory, and magnetic field and magnetism. You combine these, and what you can do with it then is achieve higher forces, lower costs, unique functionality, more secure supply chains, or custom flux field geometries. And this is the important part for a designer. When we use magnets today, we inherit with them all of the messy characteristics of magnets. You have a north, you have a south, you've got flux fields that spray out from them uncontrolled, and they wrap around to the other side. We also know that most of the forces propagate to the edges of the magnets, so it's not linear across the field of the magnet, so we have very non-linear magnetic fields. Because we have non-linear magnetic fields, most of the force actually ends up being in a wrapping function or an eddy current around the edges of the magnet. In general, though, the plane of work is not on the edge of the magnet. The plane of work is in the normal direction of the magnet, so these forces are wasted. So we end up buying magnets that are way too powerful, have way too much potential energy, and very little of the energy is actually used in the design of the magnetic circuit. So the difference between polymagnet is you take all the potential energy of the magnet and you focus it discretely on the plane of work. So you don't end up having wasted energy that wraps around the magnet, that goes through your working surface. You engineer the magnetic field to have a very specific geometry, and it only exists in that plane of work. By doing that, you can make magnets that are pacemaker safe. You can put magnets directly on circuit boards, and they don't interfere from an EMI perspective with the electrical circuits. You can put them inside of cell phones. You can put them in computers. So it frees you up to think very differently about magnetics. Now, polymagnet doesn't make magnets. We buy magnets just from everybody here at the show, whether they're from the US or Australia or India or Vietnam or the United States, it doesn't really matter to us. And it doesn't matter what kind of magnet it is. It could be Allen Co., Sumerian cobalt, neodymium, ferrite, nyron, you name it. If it's permanent magnetic material, the polymagnet process works on it. It's just a magnetization process. And it does not change the physical chemistry of the magnet. It does not realign any of the grain structures or boundaries or the diffusion boundaries or any of that. It simply takes a magnet that has one solid face of magnetic material and can make it into 1,000 different polarity regions, which you can then codify to create some unique function. So magnets come with a lot of really weird, challenging issues for designers. I've been a designer my whole life. I launched the first electric vehicle for General Motors. I worked in the semiconductor industry, and these were all challenges that we had. Well, we have uncontrolled magnetic fields, both in reach and geometry. We can't control where the fields are. We can shield them. We can do all kinds of things to try to prevent them from escaping. But when you put a magnet someplace, you've got a spray of magnetic field that causes EMI problems and interference problems. You have nonlinear fields, which is a huge problem in all audio applications, because as you move the cone of an audio application through that magnetic field, it causes distortion because you don't have a linear field. So then we have electronic cleanup of audio signals in order to deal with the fact that magnets don't have linear fields. But you could create linear magnetic fields, and then you wouldn't have to clean up audio signals. We have poor utilization of the potential energy within a magnet because we can't control where the flux fields actually are, and we can't make sure that they're focused only into the plane of work. We have very unrealistic reference data. We have lots of really interesting catalogs explaining how powerful magnets are, but in practicality, they never seem to perform at that level in real applications. So from an engineering perspective, we find it very difficult to work with it. Yeah, we got EMI issues and high unpredictable supply chain issues with tariffs and all kinds of weird things, et cetera. So how does this kind of work? If you look at the very top, this is a very typical, you know, square magnet. You can see when you start to test it across, characterize it across its face, we can see a concentration of forces in the corner and along the edges. And if we look at that in 3D, you can see that there's kind of a trough in the middle of that magnet. So it's not linear. The result of that is we end up with a lot of these kind of edge effects or eddy current forces that wrap around the magnet, because the shortest path from north to south and the highest concentration of force are on the edge of the magnets. Again, that's usually not where the plane of work is. In a design where you have a magnet in a working system, you usually aren't focused on the edge of the magnets as the place where you're trying to perform work in your situation. With a polymagnet, instead of a single north and south, you have a collection of different magnetic regions that can be custom codified. Those regions then interact and give you a topography of different polarities. That topography of different polarities can do a lot of different things. It can pull, for example, all of the magnetic force away from the edges. If you pull the magnetic forces away from the edges, then you're not going to get eddy currents. You're not going to get wraparound effects. So as an example, in electric aviation, where you have an incredibly high-powered electric motors, those eddy effects can actually cause very extreme temperature effects and have really negative consequential effects on your design. But if I don't have any wraparound effects, if I've moved all of my magnetic force away from the edges, now all of the force is going into my plane of work. So you can have some very unique and opportunistic design capabilities when you can engineer the magnetic fields. You know, simple, the box that we kind of live in, it's pretty simple, you know. We design with magnetics, and most designers say, well, I can go for a bigger magnet, I can use a thicker magnet, I can use a higher grade magnet, if they don't get the force that they want. And their paradigm is that they have this poor use of potential energy, they have a lot of eddy current and wraparound effects, they have EMI issues, and they have very poor torsion and shear capabilities because of the single pole designs. And we simply live with that. And it doesn't matter if we're on direct contact or if we have a small gap in our design, the gaps just cause more and more of this lost energy to become the edge effect energy, which doesn't affect our design whatsoever. Now, in a polymagnet design, you've created a series of polarities across a magnet. This is just a very, very, very simple instructive example. And what you can see is that we have reduced the far field effects here. In a normal magnet, I would have far field forces way out here, which would not be doing me any good at all in my design. In fact, the only thing they can do is cause interference with other electronic components or other things in my design. In this case, I've eliminated those. I focused all of the flux in the plane of work, which in this case is metal attachment. Now, this is for direct contact, but I could have designed this a little bit differently. If I knew there was a 1 millimeter gap or a 2 millimeter gap, I could have changed these polarities to extend into my plane of work for that gap. So you don't have one generic solution. You have a very specific solution for every single design that you make. You determine what material you're trying to attach to, how thick is that material, how far is that material away, what kind of forces are you looking for, is it attached, is it shear, is it rotational resistance, torsion resistance. You design a unique pattern for every single one of those. I could give you some very, very, very crude examples, and I'll show you a more sophisticated example. This is a simple two dipole magnet. You know, you can see the force curve is right here. You can see at the very bottom. You can put a very simple two-pole system in here, and you can dramatically increase the attachment force. I can create a little bit more complicated pattern here. I can create even a more complicated, more attachment force. But I can do much better than that. I can increase the attachment force by 8 to 10 times the same attachment force of a similar magnet. If I can do that, as a designer, what can I do? If I can increase the attachment force by 8 to 10 times, now I have freedom in my design. I could use a lower grade of neodymium. I could use recycled neodymium. I could substitute ferrite for neodymium in most applications and go back to ferrite, which doesn't have any of the problems of neodymium. I don't have tariffs. I don't have inspection costs. I don't have any of those kinds of issues. I also have, by the way, better mechanical properties and higher temperature operating conditions with ferrite than I do with neodymium. So I have a lot of degrees of freedom. So by utilizing these capabilities as a designer, I can do a lot of different things. And this is all done, again, by the same thing that we talked about before. You have a conventional magnet. You have a thin metal attach here. Most of the flux fields pass directly through that thin metal attach. They're not doing me any good on the other side of this design. So by designing the pattern within the magnet, I reduce the reach of those fields. I focus the fields directly in the plane of work, and I increase the attachment force. And if somebody wants to experience this, I have these three magnets sitting over in the trade show booth. You can come over, you can play with them themselves, you can see them yourselves, you can understand how it all works. This very tight reach polymagnet over here is a little bit different. It wasn't made for maximum attachment force, it was made for safety. This was designed specifically to have a field length of less than 1/10,000 of an inch. So the field will not even pass through that sheet of steel. So this would allow you to take that magnet, for example, and use it for a trade show badge where people could put it on their chest right above their pacemaker. If you've ever looked at those, it says never use one of these things on a pacemaker. You could design magnets so that you could put them. You can design buttons for clothing, for example, and you can use them on pacemakers. You have a whole degree, many degrees of freedom in design when you start to use these kinds of applications. You could also improve both shear and torsion, which are notoriously terrible characteristics for magnetic materials. This is a typical conventional magnet. You have very low shear force. But by designing a magnet, again, with multiple polarities, same magnet, same size, same cost, okay, but now you have multiple polarities across it, you can see that you can increase the shear performance by almost 7 to 1. And you have a variety of different ways you can go about that, in magnet to magnet or magnet to steel, but in either case, you can improve it. We have this example also at the booth. This is for torsion. This is designed specifically for a torsion response, where you're trying to create, think about trying to create a contactless transmission, or you're trying to create some kind of shear key that self-heals, right? So this, because it's magnetic, if you have a torsion event, it will break, meaning it will no longer rotate, and then it will self-heal once the torsion event is gone. So it allows you to have that kind of shear key. And you create all kinds of other weird configurations, a lateral magnet, which gives you up to 250 pounds per square inch of lifting force in an individual magnet. So let's look at a case study. Here's a very simple, super simple case study. This is a 1-inch conventional N50 magnet, nothing special about it. This dotted line is its force curve. So on contact with 10,000 steel, it's about 16 newtons of pull force is what you get. And of course, as you back away from that steel, you get less and less in force. Now, let's start with a super simple polymagnet design, nothing complicated at all, just very simple polymagnet design. But that design gives you 3.5 times the force of your conventional magnet. Same material, same size, same volume, 3.5 times the force. There are other designs that could give you 6 to 9 times the attachment force, but I'm just trying to show you a very, very simple one to start, right? So immediately, as a designer, I either can use more force, which is great, or I can say, wonderful, I'm gonna cost reduce. So to cost reduce, in this case, I'm gonna shift downwards to a 3/4-inch magnet. So I'm gonna shrink the magnet diameter. I'm using the same material still. That's a 42% reduction in material, but I still have 3 times the attachment force. So I'm gonna shrink again. I'm now gonna go down to a 1/2-inch magnet. I now have reduced my material by 75%, and I'm still 40% higher in attachment force than I was to start. So I take one more swipe at this. I'm going to go down to a half inch N35 now. So I've reduced the amount of material that I use by 75%. I've reduced from N50 to N35. Maybe I've decided to use recycled material or something else, which may be a lower grade, harder to magnetize. I can do that now. And I can achieve the same force, attachment force at contact that I had with the original design. Now, from there, we'll move on and we'll talk about other capabilities. I talked about the fact that there are other patterns that will give you even way more than 3.5 times. You can achieve up to 10 times more attachment force, given this different patterns, different situations, different thicknesses of material. And you can see these different thicknesses of materials that are over here of different patterns versus conventional magnets. These are the conventional magnets. These are the polymagnet patterns. So obviously, depending on the gaps that you have, the thickness of material you have to design the pattern to be compatible with each and every one of those. So let's talk about rare earth substitution and ferrite. Ferrite materials, neodymium is about 10 times the potential energy or the coercivity that you have in a ferrite product. It depends on, obviously, what neodymium you use, what ferrite that you use. I'll show you some tables in a moment. The one thing is the amount of price sensitivity in ferrite tends to be much less than in the neodymium market. Whether that's for political reasons or just market factors, it's just a more stable product in the marketplace. So less coercivity, but a fraction of the price. If you look at this chart of ferrite grades, you can get ferrite in the 5 to 5.6 range. And that compares to, neodymium and neodymium 35, somewhere between 33 and 36, neodymium 57, somewhere between 53 and 57. So the very high end of the scale, there's about a 10-to-1 ratio of ferrite to neodymium. At the lower end of the scale, though, there's only a 6-to-1 ratio. So if I can improve attachment force by 6, 7, 8 times, I can achieve the same kind of attachment forces using ferrite than I can with even the highest levels of neodymium. And these levels of neodymium are very difficult even to obtain out of the supply chain right now. So this gives you an opportunity to solve some of those problems. This is an example of, again, the same chart, the same 1-inch conventional N50. That 1-inch conventional N50 with a 1.4-inch ferrite magnet, which was about 90% less expensive, didn't have any of the issues of ferrite, the neodymium, gave us relatively the same attachment force as our conventional. Now, you can also substitute steel. This is kind of a known thing you can do for all magnets, obviously, but you can use either shunts or cups or channels in the back to substitute for some of this as well. So the combination of polymagnet patterns and also then using some of these shunt materials can further do that. This is an actual example that we just finished for an automobile supplier. This is an automobile. I can't tell you who it was, exactly what it was. I don't have authorization to do any of that, but there's an automotive application. They were attaching to 1 millimeter steel. They needed 20 pounds of holding force. They were using a neodymium product to begin with. And we simply engineered for them a polymagnet pattern. And you can see these are the results of their polymagnet pattern and the different gaps. This was an at contact application, but it was possible that they could, in some conditions, have small gaps or something like that. So that's why we looked, not only was the force at contact, but also at small gaps. But at contact, they achieved over 6 times the force that they needed. Even at 0.5 millimeter gaps, they were still exceeding the force that they needed. So in this case, they were able to take a material cost down by 95%, completely eliminate the need for neodymium, and move to a complete ferrite solution. And it gave them better mechanical properties as far as breaking, material handling, and it gave them superior temperature ratings as well. It also helps that you can very quickly relocate this manufacturing. in a world where, you know, tariffs are changing all the time and different trade deals are being assigned, they have different relationships. This equipment is highly mobile. It requires no facilitization, no water, no gases, no special foundations, nothing at all. You can plug this in your kitchen and you can operate this in your own home if you wanted to. So you only need basic warehousing space with 110 electricity. You can run it off 220 if you want, but standard electricity. So you can literally, in 24 hours, ship this to another country, put it in a different free trade zone, and make your entire supply chain completely robust to whatever political changes there are in tariffs and trade. So it's very, very robust from that perspective. So in the end, polymagnet can help you reduce the amount of magnetic material you use by up to 80%. Again, depending on what you're attaching to, what your design is, what you're trying to achieve. You can design with lower grades of neodymium. You can use recycled materials. You can substitute ferrite for neodymium, which is substantially less expensive. You can design and produce novel and unique magnetic functionality, providing product differentiation. We didn't talk about that. That wasn't the topic of today's discussion, so that's a whole other issue. You can fully saturate materials, yielding higher performance. This is especially useful when we talk about recycled material. Recycled material sometimes has issues with respect to grain size and particle sizes, so not everything in bulk magnetization actually gets fully saturated. We can overcome a lot of that using polymagnet magnetization, so it allows you to use some of these less highly processed materials and actually achieve their specification sheet rate of performance. The other really important issue is you can accelerate the design and production cycle because you can rapidly prototype. Because this is all digital magnetization, you literally can come up with a design this morning. A few minutes later, we can actually print and magnetize the magnet. You can put it in your hands and try it. You can come back. You can iterate the design. And in an hour, you can have your second iteration of that magnet. And by the afternoon, you could have gone two or three different rounds of design and innovation in a magnet by the time you're done at the end of the day. So in a world where rapid iteration and prototyping and optimization, iterative optimization is kind of the path that we're on, this tool works perfectly in the hands of engineers that want to work very quickly and very rapidly with products in their hands. You can also then, as we said, effortlessly move production to optimize the supply chain and deal with whatever supply chain issues that you might have. And that's the end of my presentation. What kind of questions do we have? There's got to be some questions because I've said a lot of things out there. Anybody have trouble getting high-end neodymium from China right now? We do. You have a question. All right. What is it? So he said it seems like it's an innovative, am I paraphrasing correctly, approach. Are there any competitors out there? You can always use fixturing to create multipolarities. The problem with fixturing is it requires geometry. So, you know, you can't put multiple solenoids a half a millimeter apart and expect that you're going to create some massive fixture with 100 different solenoids in 10 centimeters. So the challenge is the competitive approach to creating polarities on a magnet requires you to have really large regions. It also requires that you guess that you're right, because there's a long lead time and a lot of expense that goes into creating those fixtures. And if you're wrong, you have to throw it away and you have to start it all over again. So here you don't have to do that. It's digital 3D printing in a way, right? So you can print it, and if it doesn't work, you can print another one, and you don't have capital cost. So, any other questions? Oh, come on. There's got to be something. Where's our booth? It's right down there. Just go to the green carpet, and you can play with all these toys. So if you just walk down this main aisle to the green carpet, we're the first booth there at the green carpet, and you can play with all the toys yourself. Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for your effort. Appreciate it.